Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Horse Geeks podcast. I'm Kirsten Nelson, and with me today is Deb Romero. And we are back talking about horses and riders from the inside out. So today's topic is titled, what did I write down? I have to check. How Thoughts Affect Results. So this is really looking at our intention. I think sometimes what we look for is what we see.
And ooh, we could, I like that.
We could delve into the whole quantum physics. We could look at this a million different ways, but I think I'm going to have you lead off, Deb, because you had some great insights with the behind the idea that our thoughts affect our results. So that's what we're going to take a look at today.
Yeah. If we get so focused on the goal, we lose touch with what we're doing. So we're unable to listen to what is going on. If we're looking for if we're result oriented, we miss
what's happening in the moment
and part of the process. Yeah. It's that anticipation. There's a great study on alexandertechniquescience.com about anticipation and how that affects our movement. So looking at what happens when we anticipate what we're going to do at letter A.
Or can you give an example of that just sort of in day-to-day, like related to the Alexander work? So what do you mean that our anticipation organizes how we do something?
Good point. So it would be possibly thinking about where I have to be instead of where I am. I have to be out at the barn in 5 minutes, and you're not clear about your peripheral vision. You've got tunnel vision. You're not aware of how you're using yourself walking to get to the barn. You usually have a very tunnel vision, head down kind of, or forward head posture, anticipating the next thing instead of being present in what you're doing right there to get there.
So it sounds like putting our brain into the future rather than being in the present. Is that what you mean?
That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because anticipation is thinking about the future, but we could also be stuck in the past. We could be thinking about a problem that's on our mind and take our mind to the past as well as the future, which takes us out of the present moment.
Right. So it shuts down our ability to listen, to hear what's going on around us or within us or our horses.
Right. So when it comes to actually communicating non-verbally with our horses, in other words, if our mind is focused on achieving the right lead canter because our horse is having trouble picking up the right lead canter. So if that's our main focus, I think we cease to observe any issues related to why the horse might be uncomfortable picking up the right lead canter. Because I think it's human nature. I see this a lot with horses, that if the horse is struggling with any single performance issue, like a right lead canter, then what we tend to do is hammer on it, like sort of go, let's find out 8 different strategies to make it happen. And there are a lot of strategies where you can sort of set the horse up so that you make the right lead canter most likely. But there's an underlying issue. So I think what you're saying, how thoughts affect results, is if our end goal is the right lead canter, we're not in the moment. We're just seeing we're not there yet. That's the only in the moment comparison we have. And so we might push to get a result without realizing that we're risking a strain to a tendon or ligament, or that the horse has a pain issue, or that the horse has a severe balance issue in that particular direction. like not picking up a right lead canter could have to do with the inside hind leg of the canter not being limber or mobile enough to swing that far forward. Mm-hmm. It could be that there's no strength in the left hind leg as the strike off to the canter. Mm-hmm. It could be that the weight is so heavy on the right front leg that the horse can't lift the leading leg. Right. So it could be any one of those.
Yeah. Issues. And it could be where the rider's at.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of like lunging or on the ground, but yes, then if you involve the rider, is the rider leaning too far to the left or the right? Is the rider's weight on the horse's forehand where they can't lift the front yes. end in order to canter? Yeah, that factors in a whole nother layer. But what we tend to do is go, push, 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 push. I need that result because that result somehow it makes us feel like we've made the accomplishment. And so if we're, how our thoughts affect our results is when our only thought is to elicit the movement, no matter the means.
Yes.
We might have some substantial vet bills on the other side of that.
Well, and that was real interesting. I was at another stable this weekend, and I was just observing some riders in the arena, and it was a dressage barn. And this, for the terms, just to be frank, you know, trying to frame the horse the way we've all been taught, with kind of a backwards movement and driving seat. And this woman was, I don't know, trotting for 10 or 15 minutes. And she went to go to the walk and she let go of the reins and the horse exploded.
Really?
And took off bucking and bucked her off. I went,
ouch. Yeah, I was going to say vet bills or medical bills, I guess, could be the other.
And that to me is you're trying to get an end result, but you're not really focusing on the appropriate way to get there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and horses are like, they're not dogs. they just are not there to please and love. You know what I mean?
That's a good point. I got to write that down.
Like, they are not puppies.
They are not puppies.
And they are not cuddly like kittens. You know, they're, I guess, a little more cat-like in their independence. But man, do they let us know what they think in no uncertain terms. And I think when we start looking at making the horse do a movement, or using leverage to sort of pull a horse into a frame, or have this theoretical ideal that we're really restricting the movement into. So there's a big difference between guiding the movement and restricting the movement. And again, that changing that thought changes the result. So when we think we have to put the horse in a frame with that thought, or make the horse come together in order to balance, it's not an uncommon result that lady experienced. That when you suddenly drop that restraint, right? It could feel like suddenly, you know, somebody left the door open to that horse and he took off.
Right? And what was interesting, she went and decided to lunge him. He didn't want to go.
Didn't want to go forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was like, ooh.
And I mean, been there, done that. Not a judgment of this rider. It's just one of those horse learning curves that is a serious learning curve. Mm-hmm. You know, because we tend to think of them more like our pets, like dogs and cats. But dogs and cats are both predator species. We sort of get the whole thinking process. Horses, as 1,000-pound prey animals, are like 1,000-pound chickens. We don't quite understand the mentality, right? Or the logic behind this species-specific instincts. So, but horses will, how do I want to say, they're highly intelligent and they have great memories. So the more we restrain them or try to make them do something with our thoughts centered around obedience and submission, or our thoughts thinking we know better than the horse itself.
Oh boy, have I been there.
The body.
Oof. I've got lots of medical bills around that thought.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, when we, like, even if we can, with our human brains, understand a more complex theoretical ideal, bodies are so complex that the horse has to be our partner getting there. You know, just trying to cram a horse into a theoretically ideal use of its body is, it's just not going to work. And some horses will, that have a strong sense of self-preservation, will become behaviorally difficult. And horses that sort of will submit and go there quietly will typically have lameness issues, or maybe ulcers, health issues, things like that, anxiety. So bodies, like, we can't make a horse balance. We can't make a horse enjoy what we're doing. We can't make a horse relax or like it. Like, those are all the things we have to have conversations about. We have to have a willing partner, and maybe we can guide, or we can shift our conversation to sort of lead that direction, but we certainly can't make a horse feel safe or comfortable, or use their body in this coordination that is way more complex than any human on the planet could coordinate. Like, there's no human who's going to coordinate a horse better than a horse can coordinate its own body.
I think sometimes we get stuck in the thought pattern we've heard from other horse people, you know, A plus B equals C, but maybe it doesn't for that horse. Does that make sense? If I do, you know, bend his head to the left and use an outside leg, I should get a right lead canter. That's what I've been told.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, but then the body is multidimensional. Mm-hmm. So when we become predictable like that to a horse, they go, oh, there's three or four blind spots for this particular rider, because this particular rider only has one way of doing things. So I could escape here or there, or I could arrange my body this way or that way to avoid doing what the rider is asking, because for some reason it's uncomfortable to the horse.
Or it could be, and I've seen it with people, because of, you know, maybe some habitual bad use, the neuromotor pathways aren't there to do that activity. I mean, the muscularization is not adapted to that. You may have to back up some steps and, you know, ask some questions instead of asking for results.
Yes. And here is a thought that really, it was an epiphany type of thought that really changed how I did everything with horses and changed all the results for the better, I have to say. But somewhere along the line, I can't tell you exactly when, the thought of horses just sort of being put on this planet for us to ride, like, that was just sort of an unspoken given, that horses are here for humans to ride. And when I started to realize that a horse learning to carry a rider and go to a higher coordination of optimal balance, optimal mechanical function in the body, is as much a learned skill for a horse as a human learning to swim or ride a bike or drive a car. So we can learn to swim or ride a bike or drive a car, but we're not born knowing how to do that. We're not really, we're not even born knowing how to walk upright. We learn that, but that's a deeper innate, like, desire to be upright, right? But we don't necessarily ever have to learn. I was surprised to learn one of my adult friends never learned to ride a bike because she had physical issues when she was at the learning to ride a bike age, right? So she's now learning to ride a bike as an adult. And having to play with that coordination gets harder as we age because our habits are more ingrained. But we can still learn to swim or ride a bike or drive a car at any age, but we need guidance, right? It's the old sink or swim. Again, we're talking medical bills, if that's our approach. It can be done, but there's the consequence of medical bills or time off when you do it that way. So usually we look for a helper or someone to guide us when we're learning to ride a bike or swim or drive a car. And that person who's guiding us isn't strapping us into the car, isn't like taping our foot to the gas pedal or the brake, isn't restricting any mobility in our body. And that's what we do to horses. We think to make them, you know, our thought process is we put the horse together, otherwise they would never figure it out.
Wow. I go,
there's a much higher intelligence in the horse than that. So I look at training a horse with the same conversation or guidance or relationship that I would use teaching a person how to ride a bike or swim or drive a car. Like, of course, I know they're capable of it. I know they have the intelligence to do it. Some people will pick it up quickly. Other people will really struggle. Some people are naturally well coordinated and kind of know where their body is, and other people are not.
Or I know with my kids, and I was homeschooling, there has to be a certain point of understanding what you're asking.
Yes.
Might have introduced algebra and my son didn't get it. But 6 months later, it made sense. It's when to introduce.
Yes, exactly.
The next step.
So as a teenager, I picked up driving a car super easy. It just was easy for me. I just understood it. I could do it. I had the coordination. I learned to drive a stick shift pretty easily. And the automatic was nothing. And my best friend had so much trouble learning to drive and just high anxiety. Like if the light turned yellow, she would start screaming because she couldn't make a decision whether to go through it or stop, right? And it took her 3 or 4 years to really feel confident driving, where it took me 3 or 4 months, right? So that applies to horses.
That's real interesting that you brought that up, because for both of my kids, I'm wondering if we do this with our horses. Both of my kids, when I asked them when they were coming of age to take driver's ed, they chose to wait. They'd say, I'm not ready. I mean, do we listen for that in the horse? Do we listen? Do we ask? Or usually it's a demand, but I like to try to ask. Do we listen for the I'm not ready?
Which is, it's very individual.
Yeah, totally.
Very individual. Like one of the things that makes me crazy
is... Do we listen for the try?
Exactly. Because a lot of breeding organizations will put out timelines for what a horse should be doing at different ages. And it's really skewed the natural sort of individual approach to each horse, because the timeline says you should be riding in some timelines, you should be getting on your horse as a 2-year-old or you're going to have trouble, right? Other timelines might say 3 years old. I didn't start my Arabian mare that I still have at 28, who is sound and being ridden. I didn't start her under saddle until she was 6. Because at the time, I was learning and I knew that I wouldn't do a good job. I knew enough to know I didn't know. Right?
Do I know what I don't know?
Right. Yeah. So I thought as a 2 or 3 year old, I'm not going to tinker with that developing body. And all horses, like some people say, some horses age slower or mature slower than other breeds. But the truth is, no breed of horse is fully mature in their skeletal development until the age of 7.
Wow.
Yeah.
So yeah, I remember way back when, let's see, Callie is 20 this year. Mm-hmm. I brought her to you when she was 3. And you worked with her on the ground because I thought she was ready to start. And you went, nope, she's not ready.
Yeah, but it's like we look at our watch and go, time is ticking. She's 3 years old. It's time. Mm-hmm. And the belief, and again, we come back to the thought behind the result. The thought behind starting horses really young is, one thought is, if I don't get on their back while they're still young and weak, then they're going to be too powerful to teach them how to carry a rider later.
Wow.
That's one thought. Wow. But you want to get that acceptance of the rider before the horse gets too strong, or you're going to get hurt. That's the logic behind starting horses as a 2-year-old. The other thought behind starting horses very young is just financial. If you're breeding and racing and showing and you're making your money on horse sales, every day that horse isn't working is money out of your pocket because they cost a lot to feed and house and take care of. So like in the racing industry, some of those babies that are starting to be backed and breezed are maybe just barely past 1 year old.
I know.
But it's big money, like the breeding fees they pay and all of the expense that went into just having that horse land on the ground is huge.
I bred one horse and I'll never do it again.
Yeah.
Way too expensive.
No, and touring some of the big breeding farms in Kentucky, you look at their stallions list and the breeding fees, and it's in the, you know, 6 digits. It's big figures just to get the horse bred. So that's one of the big thoughts behind getting horses backed and working at a young age, which I'm not opposed to if it's done thoughtfully, understanding that the skeleton doesn't fully mature until the age of 7. So the first thing we look for in a horse to see if they could safely carry a rider is the closing of the knees, is what they call it. So on the front legs, what looks like a knee is actually a wrist joint. Technically, it's the carpus. And the horse has growth plates all over the skeleton, just like humans. So like, you know, a baby's soft spot, I don't know how long that takes to close.
I'm not sure.
But it's like you have this sort of looseness to the skeleton in the youngest years. And as we age or the horse ages, on the horse, the growth plates and the bones start to come together and solidify from the feet upward. So the last growth plates to really become solid and closed and stable are in the back. So putting a big rider on a young horse, right, and getting them to accept that, to me, it's a very delicate thing to start a horse under saddle rather than think of backing or breaking a horse where we have no idea how we could be affecting the development of their back for the long term if we don't if we just think, oh, the knees are closed, they're strong enough to carry a rider, off we go. No, because the shoulder joints might still be very loose. The hips might still be very loose. There might not be stability, but in the SI joint, the lumbar sacral joint, or any of the joints within the spine, those are all a little delicate until the age of 7. So wow. I and when I lived in Europe, people still consider a 5 to 7 year old a baby. And in the US, we think if that horse isn't performing at a relatively high level by the age of 7, we are missing the boat. Because now in the US, it's not unheard of to be retiring your horse at the age of 10 or 12.
I see that quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're, you know, they have some major lameness issues by that age.
Yes. And with my horse, a lot of people criticize me for not getting her ridden. Here she is, you know, tick tock. She's 3, she's 4, she's 5, she's 6. And I hadn't really sat on her. But, you know, she was one of the easiest horses to start under saddle by the time I got around to it. And for all the shit I did wrong in my own learning curve, she maintained a level of soundness despite my mistakes along the ways. I think because I waited. I think because her body had time to solidify a little bit by the age of 6, that it really paid dividends the older she got.
Yes. And it is difficult. The thought of the end and not the in-between. You know, it is difficult because we get a lot of input, like you said, from people saying, why haven't you started her? But
right.
I think we forget to listen to our intuition, you know, we don't listen. We just don't listen and really observe the horse and what their needs are.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think horse owners, especially when we know that we don't know, as a horse owner, it's a place where I see people just get picked on all the time. And I try to tell people, I go, look, the professional does not have your horse's best interest in mind as much as you do.
Good point.
So like a trainer might want to push the horse for their own agenda rather than taking more time, which might be the owner's goal or the owner's thought is, I want this horse for life. The trainer's thought is, I need to get my client to the show. Mm. Those thoughts can work in harmony, but without sort of mapping that out or laying it out on the table, the thought of the professional trainer can sometimes be at odds with the real thought behind why the person owns a horse in the first place. So the horse owner needs to make sure they're on the same page with a trainer, right? So horse professionals, whether it's professional jockeys or trainers or judges, your vet and farrier and body worker should have your horse's best interest in mind along with you. But other horse professionals might have a very different agenda because their income is based on performance and they are not the one who will be paying the vet bill if they get it wrong.
That's a good point.
They're not the one who's going to have a horse that's devalued, unsellable, unusable if they get it wrong. They don't suffer the same consequences as the horse owner does when the horse owner gets it wrong. So it really is up to us to listen to our own intuition and decide what are the thoughts I have either going into a professional relationship with somebody involving my horse or setting up my own horse's training program. And there can be multiple things that are important that have to be balanced with each other. I might want to get to Grand Prix and I might want to keep my horse sound and healthy over the long term. Those do not have to be mutually exclusive goals.
That's a good point. And
or thoughts.
Do we think I have to, like you're saying, the mentality of put 30 days on the horse, that thought.
Yeah, or, I want walk, trot, canter in 30 days.
Yeah.
Or, whose agenda is that?
Or the I've got to be ready by this date for this show.
Yes.
Instead of well, let's just keep working towards balance and make the decision. There's always a deadline for you to enter, usually, at least with the big shows, the little shows, not so much. So yeah, that all of that thought of control, structure, we're not listening. If we go into that mindset, we're not listening. We're just controlling time. Yeah.
And I think what you started off the conversation with is that, are we paying attention in the moment? That's where we can actually hear our own intuition or really observe and listen to our horses. And we'll get kind of a gut feeling they're ready or they're not ready. We need more preparation, or we can push forward. You know, listening to our horse and ourselves means we have to be in the present moment. So it's okay to have goals or to have somebody push you a little bit, but that we can lose sight by sort of saying, if that's our primary thought, we cease to be in the moment and we start to kind of live in the future. And that's where I see a lot of trouble between a horse and a rider.
That's where the rub is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Because the expectations are not matching the current reality. That's all.
That's a good point.
Yeah. But the expectations, to me, I go, those are just thoughts. That's something we made up. Right? Or maybe we read in a book, or maybe we decided this expert knows what they're doing and that's what they say. And so we follow it. Right? But what we call horse problems, which we all have, we all have horse problems, right? It's like, I don't know, we own horses. They cost us a fortune. They never do exactly what we want. We get 5 minutes of happiness once a month and we're addicted. It's like, that's owning
that?
A horse. Yeah.
What is
that's
that?
They call us crazy horse people. But it's like horses will absolutely sort of defend against our agenda when it's inappropriate. And what we tend to do is label the horse having the problem, when really most of the time it's the horse sort of shouting at us, this is not appropriate for me right now at this time. I either need more help over here, or I need more time, or I need something different. But then we want to sell off our problem or just retire it and be done with it and move on to another horse, because it's hard to listen. It's hard to listen to the horse telling you things you don't want to hear. And they will tell us what we don't want to hear all the
time. What? You don't want to do it that way?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or, you know, like you said, we think there's only one way to get there.
Yes.
We, you know, oh, but they said do it this way, and you drive it and you push it and it's not working. It's kind of like a friend told me once, Deb, you keep pushing on that door and pushing on that door and pushing on that door. Have you ever thought of opening it the other way? I went, oh, man.
Exactly. So, yeah, but until we get in the moment and we let go of our agenda, we can't often see what's right in front of our face.
Exactly. I totally agree. Yeah. Yeah. And I, across the board, with most dog trainers or any of that, I've heard questions asked of them, you know, who do you have to work with and fix more, the dog or the person? And all of them say it's the person.
Well, that's because animals have a certain purity about who they are. Humans are just more complex. We have more complex brains. And so who really should be the more adaptable part of the party? The higher intelligence or the lower intelligence? It's like, we're asking the animals to come to meet us on our terms. So who's really required to use more intelligence with that thought? we're not utilizing our intelligence to understand the animal and meet them where they're at in a way they can understand. That's just shutting off our intellect, right? As being lazy intellectually and lazy about using our brain, it is harder for us to meet an animal where they are, try to understand what they're saying to us non-verbally with energy and body language, and from there have a conversation where we listen first and then suggest or talk in order to have a partnership. Like I hear all the time when I ask people, especially new clients, what is your biggest goal with your horse? I want to have a relationship with my horse.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. And I go, well, what does that mean to you? Right? Because I know with animals, the idea of relationship for most people is my dog obeys me, my cat quits clawing the couch, and my horse listens to me when I want to go on a trail ride. Right? I go, that's what they think of as a relationship with an animal is obedience. And I go, okay, let's define relationship as your kids and your spouse. How's that going? Right? You learn very quickly. You can't really control your spouse or your children because that is a relationship. Right? You, even if you don't want to listen to your kids or your spouse, you're going to suffer the consequences of not listening and always demanding. And that's what our horse gives back to us. They actually demand a higher level relationship than just obedience.
Yeah. And that's a really good point, because that's when you see them quote unquote act out.
Oh yeah.
All big time.
Just like your kids. They're having none of it. And just like kids, like, you know, one of my favorite child behaviors is watching some kid throw a tantrum in the grocery store and throwing their body on the ground to become dead weight. Like that just cracks me up every time. Right. And then you can see dogs do it too. If they don't want to go for a walk, they just lay down and become dead weight. And I go, horses don't usually do that. Although it is possible some horses will lay down with a rider when they don't want to do something. But that sort of behavior is really information. When the kid runs out of words or strategies, it's like that's what they resort to, is a behavior as a strategy of communication. And that's all the dog is doing. And that's what horses do all the time.
That's a great point, because we really like to categorize it in our thinking. It's good, bad, right, or wrong.
Obedient, disobedient. Yeah.
Right. But it's really not. It's just information. It's kind of like pain in a certain place. It gives you information about you need to make a change in your body.
Yes. And with the horse, that bad behavior, as we like to call it, is the horse resorting, and usually later rather than sooner.
Yes.
We miss
yes.
all the subtle versions of that.
Completely
but
agree.
It's the horse resorting to a strategy of saying, you are not hearing me. I've got to get louder, because I really need to let you know that these thoughts you have are not working for me. It's not working for me.
Yeah. And we talk about, you really need to go back to before what happens happens. That's the juicy stuff for me.
Yeah. Because we
listening
can see
way back there.
Yes.
To what's going on instead of the big buck.
Yes.
You know, getting it, listening way before that occurs.
Yes. And I think that brings us full circle to the start of the conversation, where you explained how thoughts affect results. Is our thought so intensely on the future, the desire, the goal, the end gain, that we're no longer present in the moment? That's when extreme behavior is required to get our attention back into the moment. And when we stay in the moment, if we have different thoughts that are more curious than demanding, more listening than talking, we might actually notice those early signs before the horse has to get loud and obvious to us.
Yes.
Absolutely. So I think that's a good place to wrap it up today.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. So thank you, everybody, for joining us. Please like, comment, subscribe, blah, 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 and join us next time for another Horse Geeks podcast. See you later,
everybody.
Everyone.
Be kind.